This is a replay of the Thursday night, January 29th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We've got 3 hours to spend together, so if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine if you'll just give me a call. 888-876-5593. Yeah, people always complaining about their jobs, but let me tell you, it could be worse. And this is a compendium of interesting facts, so they say on the website, from seven of the world's most bizarre jobs. And, oh man, well, we'll get to that seventh here in a moment, because I gotta wonder. But the first is, you could have a job, that's right, you absolutely could, as a professional mourner. And this has been going on since ancient times, known to exist in classical Egypt, China, the Middle East, and mentioned in the Bible a few times and all that, to professional mourners. And so you normally would think about it in Asia, but it's not limited to Asia. Of course, we've got Greece, where there are mourologists who are paid to stand at grave sites wailing and pulling their hair. But you don't expect it in Great Britain, but sure enough, in jolly old England, companies such as Rent a Mourner offer professional grievers for $68 for 2 hours of crying. That's, oh man. So I'm not sure stateside, but it might be something to consider. Perhaps you want to be a snake milker. It is a job. You're paid to extract the venom from venomous snakes. You're wondering how to milk a snake? Well, yeah, don't try this at home. Snake milkers draw out the toxic secretion by carefully grasping the snake behind its head and encouraging it to bite down onto a collection vessel or anything but its own your own hand, right? They collect the venom. It drips from the serpent's fangs, and it's processed into freeze-dried powder. Oh, yeah, I can think of a lot of uses for that. I've watched too many Datelines, I think. But to be sold to research laboratories to develop drugs, as far as that goes. Yeah, well, that's pretty well known, actually, if you're looking for blood thinners and the like. But, of course, to make antivenom as well. So they're always looking for that. Maybe you'd like to be a professional line stander. And this is the good old US of A, mainly on Craigslist and TaskRabbit, where individuals began offering their line standing services, and there were takers. And now, apparently, there are line standing companies, that's right, who will send a line stander to wherever it is you need them to stand. Same Old Line Dudes is one of them, and New York premier team of professional line sitters. They charge $50 for a minimum of 2 hours of waiting. So, yeah, I can understand on the Black Friday sales maybe, but when else? Well, apparently enough times that the company seems to be in the black. Perhaps you like to swim. Maybe you could be a golf ball driver. Because after all, 200 million golf balls are lost each year in the United States alone. Most of them end up in the water, probably, which meaning a good ball diver could earn between $50,000 and $100,000 a year. I don't know if they're paid by the ball or what, but about 10 years ago, one golf ball diver, Glenn Berger, claimed to have earned $15 million over 14 years of retrieving lost balls from golf courses around Florida. Why not? Now, here's one very exciting. Watching paint dry. We've all heard that as a euphemism for something tremendously boring. We never realized that there was somebody who was actually getting money for it, and you can bet they were working for paint companies. And apparently, there's an English research scientist who's been interviewed, Thomas Kerwin, who works for Kerwin, works for Dulux, D-U-L-U-X. It's an international paint company. And his entire job is watching paint dry. That's right, observing the changing colors and particles of paint as it dries, both on walls and under a microscope, magnified at some point by 25,000%. It's a whole new side to paint drying, actually. I guess it's more interesting under the microscope. But there's others, one at Aquatech Coatings, and he looks for cracks, bubbles, and other defects to ensure ideal outcomes for the paint, not to mention the painter. And he's also there when it's a subject to infrared heaters, wind tunnels, and ovens. Yeah, so if you're looking for something to do, maybe watching paint dry will float your boat. You could be a professional sleeper, and I know, doesn't that sound good on the surface? Well, let me tell you what. This you'll make $19,000 for a couple months' work, but it's what you have to do. Apparently, NASA has done outcalls for professional sleepers. Anyone willing to stay in bed for at least 2 months to research on how the body changes in weightlessness. And, not to mention muscle atrophy and other physical challenges. So not quite so pleasant. There are also professional sleepers for mattress companies and things of that nature. But even pharmaceutical companies. But for the deluxe bucks, go to NASA. Yeah, and stay in bed. All right, so here's the one. Pet food taster. Anybody who has a history of having pets inadvertently at one time or another has had a dog biscuit or something along those lines. It's impossible that you've avoided it. I one of the worst experiences ever. But I always said, damn thing tasted like cardboard. That's actually what the dogs want. I'll get to that in a moment. But apparently the pet food market is huge, obviously, hundreds of billions of dollars. And so what they're trying to do, of course, is find something that your pet is more likely to actually enjoy. And since they can't interview the dogs and the cats, they smell it, they rate it, and they taste it. Pet food tasters are given a fresh can of cat or dog food to try. All right. Now, firstly, it's one thing if it's kibble, if it's dry. But if it's moist and if it's cat food, these workers who stayed on the job learned how to sample it without actually swallowing to evaluate consistency, smell, and flavor. And there are positions available now, ranging from unskilled part-time roles, your basic tasting, to professionally trained positions that involved thorough nutritional analysis. Maybe you don't have to taste those, but engineer Bob, who is keeping us on the air tonight, was quick to point out that the idea of tasting pet food has been around a while. Some conclusions have been drawn, and then there is Frosty Paws, which we'll get to in minutes here. But as far as all the conclusions, when they were looking for something, and obviously they had to observe the pets. They couldn't ask, and they couldn't rely on the humans who were eating it. They had to watch the pets in action to see what do they really like. And the answer is cardboard. They like cardboard. Well, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of products that are perfect for them as far as I'm concerned. Just perfect. Well, Frosty Paws is a treat for dogs, and humans describe it as having a mild, slightly sweet, and somewhat creamy taste. Yeah, so, and by the way, that's humans plural, so more than one are eating it. But my favorite story here came from Reddit, actually 12 years ago. And my 7-year-old informed me the new ice cream I bought tastes horrible, and it's Purina's Frosty Paws. And he said, and one of the commenters said, not going to lie, I had a bit on purpose. The ice cream, well, it's pretty good. Even dog ice cream can't be that bad, right? No, actually, frosty paws is gross, so they say. Someone else said it could confirm that it does not taste good at all. Yeah, curiosity got the best of me. And so there are pages and pages and pages of Reddit response, all of whom were willing to taste the stuff. And yeah, then when we had another guy, I tried some of the special cat milk once because it apparently has more taurine in it than Red Bull. But it tasted terrible. Far away from the taste of milk. Yeah, I could have mistaken it for an Asian dish cooked in an Australian pub. Well, all right. So there you have it. If you're complaining about your job, realize that you could be a pet food taster and things would go downhill from there. If you had any frosty paws, I'd certainly like to hear. You know, you look at the package and it actually, you know, it could be a kid's treat or whatever, you know, and it's in the frozen food section, of course. But, you know, the giveaway should be Purina, but apparently not. So 888-876-5593, 8888, Raleigh. One parent on Reddit said, if that was my kid, I'd say, oh no, you ate the dog ice cream? You're going to turn into a dog at midnight. Yeah. Others are saying, no, my kids just asked me if they were going to die. Yes, absolutely you are. It's just a question of when. And on that happy note, I hope you'll call on WGN Radio.
Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you a plum and an apricot too, yeah.
Come on to my house,
my house, I'm gonna give you gender pear and I love your hair.
WGN Radio, I'm Riley Jones. That's Ross Bagdasarian before he was David Seville and didn't have any chipmunks and all that. And actually, he wrote that with his cousin William Saroyan. It was a number one hit in 1950 for Rosie Clooney. But he recorded it himself, 1965, on Liberty. And I played it because, you know, he would have been 106 years old today. Which is this week anyway. I'm not sure if it's today or tomorrow, but anyway, deal is that's twice as old as he actually made it. Yeah, he died just a week or so before his 53rd birthday. So yeah, had he still been with us, he'd probably be gone by now, 106. But so much creativity. So 888-876-5593-8888 Raleigh. I've got all your requests too, so we'll be getting to them, and plenty of stories having absolutely nothing to do with pet food. But yeah, as I was saying to Bob, I was pretty impressed that there were tons of threads, dozens of threads immediately on people who have eaten pet food. And yeah, and not because they had no choice and were without any other nourishment, but especially this Frosty Paws thing. And some people are defending themselves saying, well, you know, there is a cartoon on the cover. It really kind of looks pretty good. Well, no. But as far as the threads versus that, no. What we need is anti-chocolate. Good for dogs, kills people. All right, so there you have that. Now, other than that, we can talk about a variety of things, providing that it has absolutely no significance whatsoever. And we can continue to talk about food, not dog food, as far as that goes. But other than that, also things like the most popular dances of the 1800s, which we don't normally think about, because after all, it's not like we have recordings of the music therein. But the idea that there were no recordings made it all the more likely that people were going to go out en masse, great cultural exchange there, developing dances. And not only that, but they traveled across the oceans and worldwide, and some of them became elaborate courtship rituals and social phenomena, to say the least. The waltz, which arrived in the U.S. from Europe, wave of controversy, actually. Prior to the waltz, most Americans in high society danced around each other without any contact. And the waltz was the first closed dance in which partners actually held each other. Now think about that, because later in the 60s, when kids were dancing where they weren't touching each other, everybody was saying how wrong that was. Yeah, well, apparently it was more wrong to actually touch them in the 1800s. And European and United States critics were aghast at the waltz. They were swift to warn about the dance's sinful nature. Of course, in Massachusetts, where everything was a sin. Yeah. In fact, yes, one of the publications in 1833 in Massachusetts advised, "The waltz is a dance of quite too loose a character, and unmarried ladies should refrain from it in public and in private." Well, criticized or not, it really caught on. Then there was the polka. And just as Americans were resigning themselves to the spread of the waltz, here comes a bohemian folk dance, the polka, in the 1840s, finding its way to the U.S., leaving a trail of exhausted dancers, to say the least. Yes, the lively hopping steps and energetic 2-4 beat. It was a courtship dance of democratic nature. The most aristocratic dancers didn't possess really what the polka dancers did. The frowns of the upper class were not enough to discourage youth, especially, from the polka. So yeah, it was sort of, I guess, the frug or hully gully of the day. The quadrille? Never heard of it. Well, it originated in Parisian ballrooms. Well, see, I have no class. I don't know what they do in Paris. Picked up by English aristocrats in the early 1800s and found its way to America, becoming one of the most popular dances during the latter decades of the century. Typically performed by four couples arranged in a square, the quadrille consisted of five or six different figures or dance steps performed in succession, each with its own specific music. Sounds sort of like a demented line dance, actually. Greatly influenced the development of square dancing, which still has its own moves, to say the least. The cakewalk, arguably the most significant American dance of the 1900s. I've never heard of it either. We're in the news, by the way. I'm talking to myself. Yes, Bob is watching the clock, and I'm not, so I'll just stop prattling until after that's done.
I've got your picture that you gave to me, and it's signed with love, just like it used to be. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got your picture, she's got you. I've got the records that we used to share, and they still sound the same as when you were here. The only thing different, the only thing new, I've got the records, she's got you. I've got your memory, or has it got me? I've got your class ring that proved your care, and it still looks the same as when you gave it, dear. The only thing different, the only thing new,
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That, of course, Patsy Cline, 1962 on Decca. And I'll tell you, that's the best record pantomime I ever saw. It was in Austin, of all things, the first time I saw it, though a lot of people have done it online, too. But Esther's Follies, they did it, yeah. And she'd pull everything out of her gown. Yes, the record, the picture, you know, the class ring and all. Anyway, all right, so 888-876-5593 would be 8888 Raleigh. And Kathy is in Rogers Park. So welcome to WGN Radio.
Well, thank you, Raleigh. It's good to hear you. Well, this has been an interesting week for me listening to your show. Yeah. I've been listening to you ever since you first started as a part-time overnight host, and I'm so glad they gave you your full-time show. Well, really, I'm not kidding. I've always been more into radio than TV, and when I would hear you talk about, you know, all the history of radio and music and the backstories and the technology and all the music, you know, I was utterly astounded. I thought they need to give this woman her own show, so I was glad that they did.
That's so nice. No, the reason I'm laughing is I thought I was long retired from this and had absolutely no desire to do it. And one of my closest friends who has done more for my career than anybody in broadcast history runs Nextstar, and he had said, "You got to do it." And I said at first, well, I'll do like a Sunday night or something. And then he was smart, because after a while, he not only said, "You got to do it," playing all the guilt cards he could come up with, but he also said, "And I'm going to throw money at you." So that's why I am here. But, you know, he always checks in, because he said, "You sure you can't do 5 days a week?" I said, "I'm not sure I can do four much longer." He said, "I'll take whatever you'll give me." And so that's the only reason I'm here. And I'm, you know, I would do anything for this guy. I'd walk on coal, hot coals for him. So here I sit. But no, it wasn't like I was looking for something to do on the radio.
Well, I'll tell you something. You know, ever since we were little, my family and I have always had our heads stuck in a radio, and I've listened to see how far away I can catch stations and things.
Sure.
And I probably listen to 6 or 7 hours of radio average per day, and that was even when I was working. Now that I'm retired, it's more than that.
No,
I love your knowledge of the history of the stations and the owners and the backstories and the technology. And, you know, I don't understand all the technology, but I get the idea. And of course the music too, and all the different artists and the managers and the record companies and the fishy deals and, you know, all the drama. It's a lot of fun. It really is. I really love it.
Good.
But this has been an interesting week. First of all, it's been really good to hear from the regulars. I was listening to Steve and Johnny's show on WGN on Saturday, and at the end, Johnny did her roll call of who's listening from where, and lo and behold, there was Jim from Richmond, who was dealing with frozen pipes.
Hello.
So it was nice to hear that Jim was around.
Yeah.
And then last night, James from the South Side called in, so I was very happy to hear that he was hanging in there and doing well. So I was very relieved about them. I always enjoyed listening to him and his World War II history. So that was fun. And then Friday night, I missed your trivia night last week. So Friday night, I'm listening, you know, catching up. And I'm thinking to myself, well, gee, she's used this trivia question before. Well, I was right, because lo and behold, midway through the show, my voice comes on the radio. It turns out it was a rebroadcast of the January 21st show from last year, where I actually called in and won a prize. So that was fun, hearing myself on radio.
By the way, my apologies. You're still waiting for that prize, but we will get them out eventually.
Don't worry about it. You know, it's just, I got my prize. I got to hear my voice on the radio. That alone was a treat. How many people get to do that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Monday night, I called in a 5 for 5, and I got that.
Okay.
And then the last couple nights, you've made comments. I thought we might explore a little more.
Okay.
Now, last night, you mentioned that Chicago streets, in your opinion, were the best when it comes to plowing snow.
Yes.
And you said that
Eddie Schwartz.
Radio host Eddie Schwartz.
Yeah,
told you it was because of the patronage system and the snowplow drivers we had.
Yeah.
Well, I never had the privilege of listening to him. I didn't listen to WGN at that time. But I respectfully would like to offer an alternate explanation that I think a lot of your veteran listeners may well remember. The original Mayor Daley died in December of 1976, and Michael Bolandic succeeded him as mayor, and he was mayor until the spring of 1979. Well, around January 12th to 15th of 1979, we had a horrendous blizzard in the Midwest. We got 21 inches of snow in Chicago.
Wow.
There was snow covering up to the tops of the doors. I mean, cars were covered. Everything was covered. It was horrible. And the temperatures dropped. And the city wasn't prepared at all. Michael Bolandic hadn't prepared the city at all. And they were having trouble just shoveling out the main streets. They weren't even touching the side streets. And as I recall, Mr. Bolandic, Mayor Bolandic, said at one point, we may not get the side streets plowed out until the spring. You can imagine how... Well, you can imagine how delighted Chicagoans were with that. They went up in blue smoke. Well, unfortunately for Mr. Bolandic, there was a mayoral election that year.
That's it.
And the primaries were February, I believe, 27th or 28th, about 5-6 weeks later.
Yeah.
So you can imagine what the voters did.
Oh, yeah.
Jane Byrne ran against him. Now, if you're a sitting mayor in a Democratic city, if you win the primary, you've won the election.
Right.
So Jane Byrne challenged him, and his failure with the snow was one of the reasons that he lost. And ever since then, whenever there's been the hint of a breath of snow in the weather forecast, boom, the city is on it. And you'll see the reporters on the evening news. They're there at, streets and sanitation, and the cameramen are filming the salt trucks and the snow plows. And the reporter's interviewing the commissioner. Yeah, we've got our men on 24-hour rotation. We're ready for this snow. And it's hysterical because sometimes they're talking about 2 to 4 inches, which, in a northern city is nothing. But, boy, every mayor knows since then, if you don't take care of that snow, you're out of here. So
that's a great story. And, he's not the only mayor, well, in this case, who lost. But a mayor who won is the exact same deal was in Denver. And what it was there was a snowstorm, kind of unseasonable, and of course, any time in Denver is unseasonable, and they don't use salt. It's absolutely forbidden. And so it was that some of the richest parts of town, Cherry Creek and stuff, just completely iced over. So that year, mayoral election, sure enough, who gets in? Federico Pena. Now, how does Federico Pena get in? Because he promises that this will never happen again. And so, of course, you probably know what's coming. I used to call him Fetty and the Dreamers. But anyway, so here's old Fetty and snow, and it was worse, right? And so at that point, I'm on KOA, so I can actually call these people on the air. And I did. And he said to me with a straight face, he said, "Well, Raleigh, here in Denver, we rely on solar removal." I said, "Wait a minute. Are you telling me you ran on a platform where the sun is going to let it melt? You have a line to God?" Yeah, and it wasn't the worst blunder this man made, but yes, I'll never forget it. We rely on solar removal. So, of course, he didn't have
I'll
to...
I'll bet he was a one-term mayor.
I think so, but later, of course, in the Clinton administration, they made him head of transportation. And I found that a little questionable because there were two things he did while he was mayor, one of which was the convention center. Beautiful convention center. Easily sat 50,000, parked less than 500. And so I talked to him about that, too. And I said, "What are you thinking?" And he said, "Well, conventioners will come in here. They won't be driving, and they'll be here to ski, and they'll take the snow train and all this." I said, "Wait a minute. You How are they going to get there? No, he had no answer. So that was bad enough. But then came the airport. And he was only partly responsible for this. But there's an area outside of Denver called Tornado Alley, at least we used to call it, like out toward Fort Lupton and all that. Well, of course, that's where they're putting the new airport. Well, on top of that.
Oh, my gosh.
On top of that, there was supposed to be a loop around Denver. And Denver, being on the Front Range, being very ecologically minded, returned the federal funds because they didn't want a loop. Well, of course, when they built this airport, they had to put a toll road in to pay for the road to get there. So that was...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so when you said that about the guy with snow, I thought, oh, my God, this sounds too familiar. And I have a feeling that there's probably throughout the Midwest and Northeast mayors who have lost over snow. It's probably not an isolated instance. That's great.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure not. I'm sure some of your old-time listeners can have stories about it themselves. But, you know, that mayor of Denver sounds like he shouldn't have been managing a McDonald's, much less a city.
The city or the entire U.S. Transportation Department. But I don't know what he's doing today. But, yes, that was, I called him Fetty and the Dreamers, Federico Pena.
Yeah, oh, geez, my gosh. Yeah, well, you know. But it's you know, that legacy lasts today in Chicago. Like I said, it's hilarious to me because I've lived in, you know, up north my entire life. And, you know, you've lived in northern cities. Two to four inches of snow is not really anything. You know, you just drive more carefully. But, oh, my God, on the TV here, you'd think it was Armageddon.
You know, it's everywhere. It's a slow news day. It's like the Weather Channel. I always say when there's a snowstorm, it can be 4 inches of snow, but they'll show the same block that got more from like 10 different angles and make it seem like all of Des Moines is under a blanket of snow. No, they all do that. And somehow that's better than, you know, when they start reporting on other things, I think. But yes, they love to do that. And I don't mind snow. What I hate, and I've lived in several cities where this was the case, was when it invariably starts as an ice storm, and then the snow comes. And as far as I'm concerned...
Well, that's different,
You know, when it comes to ice, no one drives on ice, you just aim. That's the most you can do. Yeah, so, but snow, nah. But I was so impressed, and, you know, I loved Eddie's story. I don't know if it's true or not, but I thought, hey, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, you know, there was another thing, comment you made Monday night, and I didn't want to call then, it was Monday Night Trivia, but you made a comment about how Tony Orlando was good friends with Murray the K.
Yes.
And when you worked with Murray the K, he would call and you would answer the phone.
Yes.
Well, I'm from Long Island. I grew up on the South Shore of Long Island. I still have family there. And, of course, I listened to all the local rock stations and WMCA and WABC. And I love Murray the K.
And WINS, so yes, 1010 Winsland for Murray.
And just, you know, all the FM stations and Allison Steele and Jeffrey Holder and all those folks. And, you know, Scott Muni. I love Scott Muni. I mean, I loved all those folks on, what was that station? I'm blanking out right now, that FM station.
Well, Muni was at NEWFM for years. So,
yes, that was it. That was my favorite FM station.
Yeah, and that's where Allison Steele started out. You know, when Allison Steele started out, it was that all-girl experiment, and she was the one who lasted.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, she's great. And in fact, she died, I think she might have had a birthday this week, but I was looking at that. She died of stomach cancer really young, too, in her 50s. Very sad.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
But I wanted to know, what was it like working with Murray the K, and what was... He liked. I know he glommed onto the Beatles when they came over.
Oh, did he ever?
What was it like?
He was older at that time. He actually was a minor league ball player before he got into radio, so he was no spring chicken by the time the Beatles were around and stuff. But it's funny. I worked for Murray, and then Murray worked for me, so we knew each other for quite a while. But I knew about his baseball proclivities. So when I was programming a station in L.A., we had a little softball team to play sponsors and stuff like that. And I still have a picture of Murray. He was my ringer. I'd bring him in to play ball. But, Murray was Murray. You know, I got lots of off-the-air stories I can't share. But as far as on the air, You know, I liked him. I had no problem with him. He was my host for Soundtrack of the 60s when I produced and wrote that. And, you know, before that, I worked for him and I helped him on a number of things and all that. But, yeah, and sadly, he battled cancer for a few years, and it was tough at the end and died young. He was only like 62. It was February. I think it was like February of 82, maybe. So he would have been 60. So, yeah, I miss him. His third wife, Jackie Zeman, was acting on General Hospital. And so they had divorced, and then he was sort of alone in the house in Beverly Hills and all that. And so, yeah, he did a lot of things.
Yeah, that's very young. I didn't remember hearing about, you know, his latter life. I mean, I came out to the Chicago area to go to college, and I came to Evanston to go to college and then moved into Chicago after graduating. And I've lived here ever since, but I still have, you know, my sister and her boyfriend back there, and Long Island is still home in a way.
Sure.
So I have, you know, I have two homes. I have Long Island and I have Rogers Park. So what more could one want? You know?
And Long Island is interesting because it's a shadow market in that you could hear all the stations from Manhattan. But at the same time, Long Island had some pretty good little radio stations, WALK and Patcho, of course, LIR, and on and on. So it held its own. There was a little station in Sag Harbor that I used to love, WLNG. And Paul Sidney was the program director. And I'll never forget it because I was working in Manhattan. And he said, well, come on out and visit me. I'm just on Long Island. Well, I found out why they called it Long Island. Sag Harbor was like 3 hours away, you know. So I went down there. I couldn't believe it. I was driving and driving and driving, and finally, yeah. So I said, "You didn't tell me the other half of it, Paul." So anyway, but yeah, it
well,
was
yeah. I mean, it's
a lot of fun.
It's 120 miles long and yeah. 26 miles wide at its widest point, so it's long.
It is long.
Yeah,
so
we had some
traffic too.
We had some. Oh, yeah. Well, we had some good radio stations when I was growing up. We had WGLI.
Right. Absolutely.
And we had WBAB. I don't know if that's still in existence
Babylon,
or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
The guy
exactly.
who does my morning and afternoon news and Globe used to work at GLI years ago. So, yeah, we talked about Long Island radio. Yes, yes, Big John Lubinsky. We talk about Long Island radio every time we get together. So yeah.
Oh, wow.
A lot of fun and a lot of great personalities. And, you know, it was a good market. I was a very big fan of WMCA, what Ruth Meyer did with that. And as far as WABC, I think that Scott Muni was one of the most underrated people there because he left shortly after the Beatles were there. But he was the first one to have a Beatles fan club, WA Beatles C Scott Muni cards. And, you know, he was originally from New Orleans, but he was good. And he was good on NEWFM. He made that transition believable.
Yeah, he did. He did. He was very good. And his voice. And, And one of the things that I always wanted so much when I was growing up, and one of these days I'll find one, was a WMCA Good Guy sweatshirt.
Oh, funny. I just packed mine in this move. And, yeah, I've got them. And I had left it in a closet that had a window in the closet. And so the part of the top, I showed it to John, part of the top of it has now, you know, gotten sun bleached. But, yeah, I've got my WMCA Good Guy sweatshirt. And they are available every now and then. I mean, obviously they're remakes, but they are available every now and then if you look, and you can find them online.
Well, I saw one in a resale shop in Long Island when I went with my sister one time. Unfortunately, it was too small. But I remember in gym class one time when I was in junior high, some girl came in and she was new, you know, to our school. And she was wearing a WMCA Good Guy sweatshirt. And for people who may not know what they are, they were, you know, you could win them. You could call in and win them. And they were a gold-colored T-shirt. And I believe it was on the back. They had what we call a smiley face.
Yeah,
now,
no, right on the front. Absolutely right on the front.
Right on the front, yes. Uh-huh. It was the circle with the two dots and the smile. It was the first time I ever recall seeing a smiley face like that. And now on the back, did they say WMCA Good Guy?
No,
or did they have anything on the back?
Said nothing. It was just the smiley face and then WMCA in kind of lowercase letters and then Good Guy in a different font. And yeah, I just looked at, they're on eBay right now for $28.80. So,
well, okay, well, I'll tell my sisters that's my next present.
Yeah, absolutely. But, and, you know, it's almost the right shade. I always say that because occasionally I see them and they're either too yellow or they're too orange. I'm like, get it right. But the one I'm looking at now looks actually pretty good. And I'm thinking now, mine's an original, of course, but now that I'm thinking about it, since it's sun bleached, I should probably buy one that's new. All right. Glad you brought that up.
Oh, yeah. Well, do you have any idea how much you could sell that for now if you ever decided to part with it?
Oh,
I'm sure there's a lot of expatriate New Yorkers in Chicago, and I'm sure in the rest of the country, and I'm sure a lot of us would be. You could auction that off to charity and probably get quite a good bit of money for it.
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't even want to think about it. A friend of mine cleared out Ruth Meyer. And by the way, we're off the air. The news is on. A friend of mine cleared out Ruth Meyer's effects after she died and came across her MCA sweatshirt. And he put it on for sale. And believe it or not, Gary Stevens' daughter bought it.
But
I don't think she paid more than $20. So, but you're right. Yeah. But she's got it. And that was Steve Warren was the guy who did that. But anyway, yeah, I'm looking at this, and if it is actually the color they say, this is pretty inviting. I might have to get one of these.
No, wait a minute. You've got to let me get one first.
Oh, no. All you want. Remember, these are recreations. You probably can buy hundreds. I mean, you're not going to get as far as that goes. Yeah. And you can get any size you want. So, yeah, absolutely. So, good.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking
Likewise.
To you, and I really enjoy your show. And I'll keep listening. And
okay,
as soon
thank
as you,
you
come back off the break, I'll be listening.
Thank you so much. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
Okay,
bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, Julie, you never know how I love you. Oh, Julie, a teenage dream that can't come true. I see you, Julie, each day as you walk by. Maybe someday, Julie, I'll be the apple of your eye. Although you're older than me, it makes no difference, you see, as you are my shining star. You've heard a passion for love and jealousy, my dove. Well, that's the way feel about you. I need you, Julie. You'll never know how my heart grows. Oh, please, please help me.
WGN Radio, Raleigh James. And that, 1957 on NASCO. Oh, Julie. And that was Robert and LaGrange who wanted to hear that. That's the Crescendos. And they were an interesting group. They were in high school at the time, Cumberland High in Nashville. And they used to do dances. And a disc jockey there, Noel Ball, who did a number of things. In fact, supposedly co-wrote that. I say supposedly because the group swears no, it was the other writer. And Noel just, which is fairly common. Sort of like Murray the K's mother wrote Splish Splash. Okay, fine. Yeah, look at the label sometime. It's really who got the writer's credit. But in any event, Noel gave Oh Julie to them, and here they are. They're in high school. They recorded at NASCO, and it's a hit. A one-hit wonder, to say the least, but a big one. The gal in it is Janice Green, and interestingly, there were five members, including Janice, and they lived within, I won't say blocks of each other, but within a couple miles of each other, and they never performed again. You know, they got out of high school. They went their separate ways. That was the end of it. And so they could all remember Oh Julie, and Robert did too. So, all right, Marty is a first-time caller, and he is in Whiting. Welcome to WGN Radio.
How you doing, Raleigh?
All right, what's up?
Not much. Last night was the first time I listened to you extensively. And I like your knowledge about everything, really. And now to come to find out, you knew Murray the K.
Well, yes, I worked for him, and he worked for me, yes.
Well, I'm 62, and you're probably only a year or two older than me.
Yes, that's right. Well, actually, I'll take what Wikipedia claims I am or whatever it is online. That's my age. Yep, I'm swearing to that.
You know what? Yeah. If you can't dazzle with the brilliance, fool them with you know what.
Absolutely so. Right. Yes, I was a child prodigy. That was it. All right. So what are we talking
hearing
about?
Hearing that song, I feel like going to a sock hop tomorrow or tonight.
Yeah, I can't believe it was ever a hit, actually, but it was. It was a huge hit. And what can I say?
That I haven't heard that in years. But the reason I'm calling in, I didn't know what the hours were for your show. So I was going to call in last night, but that last caller before the show ended, I couldn't get in, obviously, but he was talking about the weather.
Yeah.
And I've lived in Whiting 15 years now, but, you know, Saturday was so cold. And this tells people how cold it is in the Midwest. But like 2 o'clock in the morning, watching a movie, somebody's knocking at my door. So I put on my shoes, go downstairs, open the door, and the thermometer wanted in.
All right there. Yes. Yes, indeed. Okay.
Okay. I'm done with the jokes, but,
you'll be here all week. Try the veal. Indeed.
My mom was a big Patsy Cline fan. And when you, came back from the first commercial,
yeah,
I'm like, sounds like Patsy Cline. And now you've seen her. Did I hear you correctly?
Well, I have seen her, but no, what I was talking about that I've seen long after she was dead, you know how people do record pantomimes? Well, that She's Got You is one of the funniest damn pantomimes I've ever seen, because it's a woman and she's dressed in this real nice gown and very, very busty. And what happens is one by one, she's pulling everything in the song out of her, out of her chest, the record and the picture and the key and everything. And by the end of it, I mean, she's pretty flat chested, and that's where she holds her chest and said, I've got these little things and she's got you. And it's just absolutely hilarious. But no, I had seen Patsy Cline, but not doing that, that's for sure. I'll tell you what.
Okay, well, now I understand what you meant when you said that, because I'm sitting there scratching my head. Like, what's she talking about?
Yeah,
but now
I'm
I know.
I'm sure there's several of them online. A lot of people have done it since then, but it was originated at a place called Esther's Follies in Austin. And whoever that young lady was who did it many decades ago, it was just, I was practically on the floor laughing the first time I saw that.
I got this mind's eye right now thinking, it's like, I could see myself laughing at something like that. What do they say about Austin? Keep it weird?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you don't have to try hard, believe me.
And then when you was talking about dancing, this is another reason I'm calling, besides my joke about the thermometer.
Ew.
But have you ever seen the movie, They Shoot Horses, Don't They?
I'm aware of the movie, but I've seen 5 movies in my life. That was not one of them.
Really?
No.
I've seen that in high school, and has to do with a dance marathon.
Yeah.
Back when they had those in, the 50s, I think it was. But
oh, no, the depressions. The dance marathons come from the depressions. You'd win enough money to eat. And one of the people who used to do the dance marathon a lot was actually Frankie Lane, who later became a big-time singer. But we used to talk about that. Yeah, this was a depression thing.
Okay. I seen that in high school. My English teacher for a couple of years out of the 3, he was a movie buff, and he turned me into a movie buff. But when you was talking about the polka dancing and dancing too close, I can still see a couple scenes in my brain here, thinking out loud that they're so tired and they're just hanging on each other. But
yes.
But if you're not a fan of movies, but if you ever get a chance, check it out.
No, I'm absolutely aware of the movie, because obviously it's an all-star cast, Gig Young, Jane Fonda, and everybody else, Al Lewis, and there's a lot of people I know who are in that movie.
Oh, wow.
And it's probably a great movie, but I'm just not a movie person. However, now that you mention it, I'll see what I can do. But I'm sure if there were dance marathons, this is the depiction of the Depression, because that's one of the real landmarks for Depression. Area stuff where these dances, because literally people would make enough money to eat, and that's what it came down to.
Wow.
Yeah. So absolutely.
Getting back to Patsy, my mom passed away in '96, but my mom did a mini Pearl act.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, the hat with the
price
tag on it, you know.
The price tag, yes. Yes.
And when I bought her house and was cleaning it out, I came across a postcard that Minnie Pearl had sent to my mom. Now, unfortunately, through my moves, I've lost the darn thing. But yeah, I remember running across that. It's like, wow, Minnie Pearl wrote my mom.
Well, Minnie Pearl died in 1996 also. And, Sarah Cannon was her name. And she was a real society lady. I don't know if you knew much about her. But
I've seen it. Yes, I have. Sorry to interrupt you. But, you're correct. I've seen a documentary. She went to that girls' school, but continue.
Well, I'm not 100% sure why I remember this, but I wound up at her house for an afternoon, and
you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, and so I we had a lot of time talking about it. She went to Belmont University and all that, and she was just as classy as it could be. And played that part to a hilt, but she was absolutely not that at all, to say the least. And after she died, in her will, she pretty much funded part of, I don't know if it's Vanderbilt Hospital or which one, but a whole cancer wing is the Sarah Cannon wing because of her donation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
but that's awesome.
She was on the Grand Ole Opry, of course, forever, but she was one of the regulars on Hee Haw. And a good friend of mine was the writer for Hee Haw. And Bud Wingard, and it was so funny because he'd never been a comedy writer. He was a salesman for like Clairol or something, and he needed a job. And he actually just cleaned up jokes that he had heard in adult clubs, and they gave him the job, you know, basically. And it was the funniest thing because, you know, we'd go out to dinner regularly, and at one time he came over my house and he saw a whole stack of, at the time they were called the Electric Weenie. It was a joke service that a friend of mine did, Tom Adams. And he said, could I have those? And I said, sure. And what I didn't tell him was Tom did his jokes by sitting there in front of the television watching Hee Haw or The Tonight Show or one of those. So Bud Wingard, who was the Hee Haw writer, wound up reusing his own jokes and not remembering it.
He must have had CRS like I've got.
Oh, of course. You know, he didn't care either way. But, I mean, it was to this day, you know, we thought, my God, a guy who goes to a strip club a few times, writes the jokes, and they name him the head writer. But, of course, you know, nobody thought Hee Haw would survive. And when CBS dropped it after the first year, best thing that ever happened to them, because that was in syndication forever. Yeah.
Right. My family, we lived in Ohio at the time, and when it was on, it wasn't in syndication. Obviously, we're talking the 70s, but I can remember my family sitting around watching Hee Haw. I think it was on Saturday or Sunday night.
Yeah, right. But no, that wasn't syndication. It was in syndication in the 70s. There was literally.
Oh, really?
It went quickly. Yeah, this was on CBS for like a year, and then they had that purge where they wanted to get rid of their hillbilly shows like Green Acres or Beverly Hillbillies, and so they dropped Hee Haw. There's only two shows that I know of that were network shows that were bigger in syndication. One of them's Hee Haw. The other one was Lawrence Welk. Another thing where they dumped him, and he did better in syndication than the network. So yeah, that was mostly a syndicated show.
Wow.
Yeah, and it used to
memories.
Yeah, it used to be done right there at WLAC TV5, and you know, every week. But it was not a CBS property, even though LAC was a CBS affiliate at the time. But yeah, that was it.
Hey, quick question: How long have you been doing this show? Because one of my resolutions was quit watching so much TV. I'm a retired construction worker out of the labor's union.
Uh-huh.
And I've been, well, the last 3 or 4 weeks, that woman said like 6 hours a day she listened to the radio. Yeah. I've got her beat.
Oh, man.
But how long have you been doing this show here?
The Monday through Thursday thing since Labor Day 2020.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm glad I came across you in the dial.
Yeah, well, me too, actually. Yeah, it's the longest I've ever done anything because my friend who I'm doing the show for also knows me well enough to know that if people tick me off, I just walk away. So he makes sure nobody talks to me, and everything's happy. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you go. I know you got a ton of callers that want to call in, but it was nice talking to you.
I'm so glad you called, Marty, and do it again.
Yeah, I definitely will. And okay. I could see you and me belling up to a bar and having a drink together if you drink and talking all night about music and whatever.
Well, I'll have Mexican Cokes, but love to talk about music. All right.
Okay.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Take care.
All right. So 888-876-5593. That's my only vice, Mexican Cokes. And I just love them. And yeah, and of course, they're no longer sold in Mexico, but they still sell them for the specialty market in the U.S., and it's lovely cane sugar. And yes, I'm aware that Coke apparently in the U.S. is coming back with cane sugar, but no, I'll stick to my Juarez and Tijuana bottlers. Thank you. So Robert in LaGrange, we played his bumper, and he's going to be calling. Eduardo in Tampa, Fran in Austin, Tom in Cedar Lake, and you too, coming up on WGN Radio.
Even telephone, I need you person to person. Bring your big fine foxy cell phone home. Don't send me no message. You know I'm all alone. I need you person to person. Bring your big fine foxy cell phone home.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Eddie Cleanhead Vincent, and person to person. And that was Dave's request for Betty, and a fine song. He was great. I liked him. And 1962 on Riverside for that. By the way, the album was Backdoor Blues. But the reason Cleanhead, of course, he's bald, but how he got that was he had used a hair care product that had lye in it, and hair fell out. And he actually liked the look to the point that he shaved it after that. And when the lye first destroyed his hair, everybody said, "Hey, it's Cleanhead," and it stuck. So that's the deal there. So 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. Robert in LaGrange, welcome to WGN Radio. How's it going, Robert?
Oh, pretty good, Raleigh. You know what? I've heard the story of during the great plane crash with Buddy Holly. Yeah. And I was just wondering, was it, I believe it was somewhere in North Dakota where the plane crashed.
Clear Lake, Iowa.
Oh, was it all Iowa? Okay, wow. I'm having a senior moment here.
Well,
sorry.
It's in the area, and of course the next stop was going to be Minneapolis or Fargo, one of those, and that's the people who wound up taking over for that Winter Dance Party tour. Of course, that's how Robert Beline, yeah. Bobby V, and someone else got
right
because of that. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And there was someone, he was pretty famous in the country and Western later. I think he was taking one of the crickets' place, and he made a bet with someone.
Tommy Alsop, the coin toss?
Right. Yeah.
Tommy. And, I like Tommy. Yeah. Right, absolutely. Yeah. He lost the coin toss. That was true, and he always carried the quarter. And good session player. Liked him a lot. And there were a lot of stories about what was going on. There's still questions actually about that.
Uh-huh.
But the flight service for the most part was a really good one. So I don't know.
Yeah, but the one about Bobby V, that was actually Bobby V who took his place at that auditorium that night.
Well, not that, not that night, because he played that night. It was afterwards. It was, you know, it was after the concert.
Oh, that's right. It was after the concert.
Yeah. So, but then they had to get people to, you know, to fill in on that. And, sadly, Ritchie Valens was so young. And, of course, the big bopper. So, it was a sad moment all the way around. But, and, you know, Clear Lake, Iowa, to this day, every year, and I'm sure it's coming up in a couple of days, they have a big concert remembering that.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that, yes. And I know the Big Bopper was a DJ, I believe.
Oh, absolutely, in Beaumont, yes.
And had
done that semi-novelty Chantilly Lace, and that's...
Right, just as a novelty, they decided for him to record it,
And so, he absolutely was on that, but... We'll never know. There's somebody who's doing a documentary, and I don't know much about this, but he's convinced, whoever this person is, because I get these email all the time that I don't have time to really follow up, but convinced that that Buddy Holly was the reason for the crash, because he was actually at the controls, and, you know, on and on. And if you're interested, you can probably find that. But I thought, everybody needs a conspiracy, so here's this.
Oh, sure. I never heard that one.
He's got a whole big thing coming up to that.
That'd be good to look into.
I think the next night was actually the next night was going to be Moorhead, which is right by Fargo. Moorhead, Minnesota is next to Fargo, North Dakota, and that was going to be it. That's how Bobby B, Robert Valine, the Shadows was his group, got on there, because he was a local talent and they needed somebody quickly.
Yeah, and I guess that was sad to say, but it was a big break for him, I'm sure.
Oh, of course it was. Of course it was. You betcha it was.
Gave him the recognition, yeah.
Yeah, and of course he wound up on Liberty ultimately with Snuff Garrett producing him, so that was, as far as I'm concerned, a ticket to gold right there. But there were a number of people on that tour. And that was very common back then, like the Winter Dance Party Tour, package tour, you know. And usually they're all on the bus. Well, it was pretty cold that night, to say the least, so the idea of flying sounded pretty good. Yep.
I was in Graceville here, but I remember that pretty well, Okay, Ben Varelli, I wanted to clarify that, too. Thanks a lot.
By the way, I think that Bobby V might not have even been 16. He might have not been old enough to drive, I seem to remember.
Was he that young?
Very, very young. And so it was just one of those things. He was right there, and, I don't think he even had the band that long, but, you know, they got the call, and there they were.
Fate, I guess. Yeah, right.
Yeah, you betcha. Yeah. All right. Well, good to hear from you. Thanks.
Okay, Rob.
Appreciate it.
Sure, bye-bye.
Yeah, it was Waylon Jennings was on that tour, in fact, with Tommy Alsup, and Carl Bunch was the other one they were doing it. And Dion and the Belmonts were on that tour for a part of it, if not all of it. But they were going to go from Clear Lake, Iowa to Moorhead, Minnesota, which, like I say, that is basically, Fargo. And the coin toss was Tommy lost to Ritchie Valens. And sadly, I still have, and this is so weird, and I'm not sure why, but Ritchie Valens was from a fairly poor family. I've blown the news entirely, by the way. Now, this is a record. I always said to John, don't come in, don't interrupt me, but I just realized I have talked completely through the news. Maybe he needs to start coming in again. We'll see on WGN Radio. Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's Les and Larry Elgard. And, yeah, who requested that? Frank did, actually. In 1964 on Columbia was from the album Command Performance, and Skyliner is the tune. And Frank also asked for an Andy Williams record, and I forgot which one it was. I try to think, but I... Yeah, try to think is the operative... Tried is the operative word there, isn't it? All right, so hope he heard Skyliner. And maybe one of these days we'll find out what the Andy Williams record was. When I was looking for that, by the way, I'm not sure why, but I thought about Claudine Longet, and I thought, let me see what she's up to. And she's still alive, and she sold her Aspen house a few years ago, the one she bought for $500,000 in 1978. Sold it for like $60 million, I think. Originally it was up there for $89 million. And my God, but it turns out that house is up for sale again for $300 million. Well, it's 5 acres. It is Aspen. I don't know what to tell you. But right. And people wonder why I don't have time to do anything, because my mind meanders in those ways. So we have a Fran in Austin. What's up tonight, Fran?
Hey, Raleigh. Really enjoying tonight's show. Interesting. Thank you. Callers.
Yeah.
But I would, first of all, I was wondering, you know, what, because we heard from James last night, and I was thinking about a couple of people we haven't heard from for a while. Pete, I forget where he's from, but he was in the convalescent.
Yes, right.
A lot of
exactly.
Health and housing issues. And so I was wondering, you know, what happened to him? Because last I heard, he, you know, was really having a bad time.
Yeah, you're right. It's been almost a month since we heard from Pete. So Pete,
and he used to call. Yeah, he was calling pretty regularly. Yeah. And another one that used to call every trivia night. I can't remember very many trivia nights that she didn't call in. She called other times too. But Laura and Willowbrook.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
I haven't heard from her for a while. And so I know that she had fairly recently been to the hospital. She was out and everything, and I remember she was having trouble with her chair.
Yeah.
it lifted her up, but it wouldn't go back down.
Hopefully, Laura, call and let us know how you're doing. Absolutely, good.
Yeah, so, you know, I just thought when regular, because some people don't call as regularly, some people I wish would, but, you know, but people that call regularly and then they kind of drop off the map, my mind meanders too. I wonder where are they now?
I'll tell you the one that I'm worried about, and that is he used to call all the time, and now it's probably been a year, and that's Tom in Covington.
Oh, I have some theories about that, but because I noticed for quite a while you were having to really pick questions for him, because he was just having the hardest time with things that you would pick for him that were right in his wheelhouse as far as, you know, and so, and I don't know. I just remember a lot of things that people say, and just through things that he had said over the years, I didn't think he had anybody.
Right, and
to
you
help
know,
him.
That's it. I of course you start doing web searches and all that, and I actually found his father's obit. As far as that goes, from 2015. And then the most recent I found online of him was 2016, when he got cited for not cutting his lawn or something like that. And
But he was losing, I believe he was losing his memory fast. And, you know, so hopefully, I don't know. It's hard to say about something like that. I mean, I would rather...
not be here.
It sounds terrible.
No,
I would rather not be here than live in a memory care facility and be like that, especially being blind, because almost everything, you know, you can look around a room and you can know what's there, and we have to remember where everything is. And a friend of mine had a friend, I never met her, but she was blind, and she was living in a memory care facility, and she used to complain all the time, they won't show me where the dining room is. They won't show me where... I don't want someone taking me all the time. I want to go by myself.
Right, exactly.
And so she talked to the nurse there, and she said, we are showing her. She just does not remember.
Oh. Yeah.
And I thought, you know, oh my God, if I'm like that, you know, I told Gary, if I'm like that, you know.
Right. Well, absolutely. And you know, don't be apologetic for that, because I've never heard anybody say, "Dear Lord, let me linger." You know, I think all of us, it's universal that if we can't fend for ourselves, we don't want to be here.
Yeah. Well, I've got that in my, you know, Gary and I both wrote up the, you know, things that we want and don't want. And
right. Good.
Both of us said, you know, if we lose our minds, don't go through any, you know, just put us in hospice, you know, or what is it, comfort care or something. Mm. I don't know what they call it.
Yeah, palliative. You know. It's palliative care.
Palliative. Yeah, palliative. That's what it was I was trying to think
of. Yeah. No, absolutely. I relate. I've got a really strong living will. In fact, John laughs and said it's the hangnail clause. I get a hangnail, I can go. You know, so bottom line, no matter what it is, I'm out of here. So, yeah, that's just the way I feel about it. Don't need no adversity. Ready to go tonight. Thank you very much. So
yeah, you know, it's like even if I get in just way too much pain for me to tolerate and I can't live a normal life, you know, it's like... I mean, now I have my days, but, you know, I get over it.
Well, sure.
You know. Just a real quick note on that. My hands are a little better.
Good.
And my knees are a little better.
Good.
Now the problem is I have a rash all over.
This is important. Call your doctor. This is
really?
This is important. Call your doctor tomorrow.
Okay, yeah, because I told her that I was getting rashes from the
methotrexate. Yeah,
And she just kind of looked at my shoulder and she said, "Well, I see some dry skin here,
yeah,
but I don't see any rash." But I was going to have somebody sighted, you know, because she just looked at that one little part, and I thought, "You're not looking in the right place."
Have somebody sighted take a picture and send an email it to her.
Okay. That's a good idea.
Yeah,
okay.
Something like that. Or if they have a portal that you can use, in most portals you can't. That's why I said email it. But that's one of the on the drug list of concerns. That's one of the things that they said: call the doctor. So do it.
Okay, I definitely will.
Yeah.
But, oh man, because I was so happy in a way, because even though. I hate the methotrexate, and I wish I didn't still have to take it, but I can bend my fingers, and
right.
The most important thing is, I can use my cane. It still hurts a little bit.
But you can use it.
It
may be a thing where it's okay, but you just want this checked out so you know it's okay. Since there's all sorts of black box warnings on these drugs, you want to make sure that every change that you have somebody take a look at this. And so I would definitely...
I've had rashes from, I don't know, just about everything. They've had to go through blood pressure medicines with me forever until I found one that didn't give me a rash. But anyway, you're we were talking earlier about eating dog food and
yes.
Well, I have two stories about that. One, my mother used to work nights. She worked at she worked at a lot of the fancier restaurants in LA, and she was a very sought after wait person. She was very good.
Where was she?
She worked at the Captain's Inn.
Okay.
Oh, God, I can't remember. That's the last one I remember, but some of the places she worked in, there were a lot of, you know, like, movie people and...
right.
Oh, some yacht club. Oh, I think that was
there was Captain's Inn in Long Beach and Captain's Table also in really in L.A., but Captain's Inn Long Beach was a real big place.
Yeah, she worked there at the one in Long Beach. In fact, I used to go to work with her, because sometimes when my grandmother took care of me most of the time, unfortunately, once in a while she would take me to work with her, and it was funny because I had a taste for expensive foods, and I could order. I talked really early, and I, you know, what do you want? You know, I want Chateaubriand.
Yeah, very good.
I want, you know, all these, you know, fancy foods and things. But anyway, she worked there, and she'd get home at night, and my grandmother always had something for her to eat, you know, when she got home. And she saw this pan on the stove. and she had two big bowls of it. And she told my grandmother the next day, what happened? You know, she said, I love that stew you left last night. It was really good.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And so my grandmother then said, what happened to the pan of dog? Because what she would do is she would take the dog food, and if there were leftovers from somebody's plate, you know, or leftover little bit of something but not enough to fix, you know, for the next night or something, she would put it in the dog food and heat it up. I mean, this dog ate well. And she ate two big bowls of the dog food, and of course I was 6 or 7 years old at the time, and I just thought that was hilarious. My mom ate dog food! That, well, you know?
No, it is hilarious. I love that. That's great. But yeah, the captain's in Hemlock 8-15-38.
Yep.
Yeah, gosh, and I don't know why I remembered that, but it was like Alamitos Bay.
Yeah, I always forgot to ask, but I wondered if you had ever gone there.
Yeah.
But, you know, they had what you call Continental Service, which, you know, nobody's got that anymore. It's hard to find a table. It's hard to find a place that you can actually sit down and order anymore. But, you know, but anyway, another time, I was at somebody's house, and I was staying with them for a couple of weeks, and we were, we were smoking a little weed.
Okay.
And I got the munchies, and, you know, we were good enough friends where she'd say, you know, just help yourself to anything you want in the kitchen, you know, you don't have to ask, just, you know, help yourself, you know, make yourself at home. So I went in, I'm looking for something, and I can't find anything. So I find this little, I find this box of crackers.
Yeah.
And so I open it up, and I take one, and I think, this tastes nasty. You know, it didn't taste really, it just didn't have much taste to it at all. It tasted like cardboard, kind of.
Right.
But I thought, well, you know, she's got this nice bottle of blue cheese, you know, it's kind of thick blue cheese dressing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll put some of that in a little bowl and dip it in the blue cheese dressing, and that didn't even help. So I said to her the next day, I said, what are those crackers?
Oh, God.
And she said, what crackers? I don't have any crackers. And I showed her the box. And, you know, both of us had guide dogs at the time.
Yeah.
So I showed her the box, and they were milk bones.
Oh, God. I love it. I just love it.
But the milk bones I bought for my dog were big, and these were little, so I didn't recognize them as milk bones because they were small. And she said, well, they didn't have any of the big ones, so I had to buy the small ones.
Oh, God, this is
small. And she said, so I said, well, you know, I dipped them in ranch dressing, and that didn't help, or not ranch dressing, but blue cheese dressing, and that didn't help. And I finally said, oh, the heck with it, I'm going to bed. This is no good. You know? But, so, you know, here I am trying to eat milk bones.
Oh, God.
And, oh, she never let me live that down. She said, yeah, you know, when I was going over to her house, she'd say, okay, I'll make sure to buy some milk bones.
Yeah, well, actually, it's a perfect story because I was hungry before you called. I'm not now. So.
Yeah, I was telling John what I was going to talk to you about, and he said, I'll turn off my speaker.
Yeah, exactly. You betcha. Oh, that's great. Thank you so much, Fran. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay, bye.
Oh, there's a song that, bye. It's okay. Bye.
All right, so there you are. Yes, and I also wanted to thank Fran for turning me on to the drug song yesterday. And so, and John says it's time to shut up, so I will on WGN Radio.
Till someday. guess you've gone away, and I don't know how long you're gonna stay. But if you come back, you can be sure I'm gonna.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That's a very young Tom Bell and Kenny Gamble. Yes, there's Kenny and Tommy, and Someday. And a great song, actually. Someday You'll Be My Love. 1962 on Heritage. It's when they were working with Jerry Ross. And had Tom Bell still been with us, he'd be 82 this week. All right, so 888-876-5593. Eduardo in Tampa had an interview. All right, how did it go?
I thought it went well.
Good.
I mean, I really liked the interview. I mean, it was a short interview. I mean, mostly about what I did, you know, previously, which I told them about my Blue Cross time over there in Chicago. But and then the floor manager was in there on the interview, and he took me on a tour. I mean, the hospital in Largo. Four floors. I mean, it's been around since the 70s, but it's been remodeled. So it looks very nice. Everybody was friendly that I came upon.
Good.
So I think I would be have fun. The only thing is from North Tampa to Largo, that's a trip.
Well, it is.
It's at least an hour drive.
Yeah. Yeah. But
that's the only thing.
You know, we'll see what they offer you in terms of pay. Hopefully it'll be enough to say, "All right, I'll do the drive." You know, you know you probably
Yeah, it's pretty more the benefits and the chance to work inside more than that. I mean, cause, okay. You know, I mean,
sure.
You know, I mean, my place is paid off, and I mean, I don't have any kids, and I mean, you know, I'm doing pretty well, so.
Good.
But, yeah, I mean, to work in that atmosphere, to walk around, not be parked in one station, you know, you get to walk around, talk to people, and that's what they want, because, you know, they don't want a robot working there. You know, they want somebody who's able to interact. They use a good word to use is concierge, like
okay.
The hotel.
Okay.
Yeah, to have that concierge attitude.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I told him about my
Hang on a minute. Don't go away.
Okay.
I'm actually not going to blow the news this time. I'm determined not to on WGN Radio. Huey Piano Smith and the Clowns, of course, Huey on piano and not vocals. That's Bobby Marchand. And the other guy, Scarface Williams. So that's the deal there. And I was playing it because Huey Piano Smith would have had a birthday this week, but I don't remember how old he'd be. So whatever it is, happy birthday to Huey Piano Smith. All right, so now Eduardo in Tampa, who I so rudely interrupted. Sorry about that. We're back.
Yeah, so, you know, I really liked... you know, the tour, and, you know, hopefully I'll get something like that. It'd be great to work around people like that.
Uh-huh.
You know, seeing them get better.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I mean,
good
it would
luck.
Be a fun atmosphere. I mean, the people look like friendly to get along with. I mean, everybody's helpful, so the facilities are nice. Yeah, the only thing is, it's an hour's drive, but you know, I think I can manage.
Well, how did they leave it? What's the next step?
Oh well, they're still going to be reviewing, you know, which candidate they're going to choose, and you know.
Okay.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, next week I got the JW. I got another conference.
Yeah.
JW Marriott. Yeah, I got that for a week, and then Sunday I got that. They're playing that outdoor hockey game.
Okay.
In Raymond James Stadium. So, yeah, it'll be a fun working week next week.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe I'll send them like tomorrow's Friday. Going into the weekend, maybe I can send them like some kind of email and, you know, let them know, hey, you know, I'm really interested in this position. So it'll stand out, you know.
Sure.
For, yeah. But I do have other ones that I haven't heard from BayCare. I mean, I found one where I applied at where you're driving the company vehicle and you're delivering, I guess, some kind of like lab results or something like that to other facilities. So, you know, there's some interesting positions there. There's another transporter position that I applied to another hospital, a medical office where they need somebody with Spanish. So
good.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens here.
Yeah. No, but it sounds good. It sounds sounds hopeful. Yeah. I really hope this one comes through, even though it'll be a far drive, because I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, Largo is an interesting town. I mean, it looks quiet, but it looks like a nice community. I never, that was my first time going in there. I mean, I know it's south of Clearwater.
Right. It's in Pinellas County, so, you know, it's about... I think you got St. Pete, you got Clearwater, you got Largo, that's pretty much it. But yeah, there's probably close to 100,000 people there, I would guess, and it's not too far. I mean, like everywhere else, it started out as Indians and all that. But I mean, it was incorporated. Before I was alive, but by the time I was there, it was already Citrus City is what they used to call it, because they do you know, citrus packing and canning and, you know, all that stuff. And so then, you know, after the war, I think is when it started taking up, because you started to have companies, you know, other than just agriculture. Honeywell had a facility there. And someone else, maybe GE, I don't know. But anyway, they suddenly had that, and that helped it, I think, more than anything. So yeah, but now it's just part of Tampa Bay, as you know, and it's all one as far as that goes. You'll see the longer you're there that in general, Hillsborough County, which is Tampa, they're usually willing to vote on all of the things, like whether you have an airport or a stadium or whatever. In Pinellas County, because it's mostly retirees, they don't usually want to. So you usually get less going on in terms of new growth in any way that's involving the government in Pinellas than you would in Hillsborough. That used to be the big difference, and I don't think it has changed.
Yeah, I mean, it's looking like the Rays are going to be parked right next to the football stadium, the Hillsborough Community College. They're going to take over that complex, so that's what it's looking like.
Yeah.
So St. Pete's will be out of a team.
Well, I mean, that's it. If you don't want your taxes increased and you don't vote to do anything, you wind up not getting much. And of course, Clearwater, at least downtown, was literally taken over by the Scientologists. So that's a whole,
right.
Yeah, I know. Enough said about that, I guess. But anyway, they've. They built things and all of that. I for a while, I think there was that big thing about they had the Largo Clock Tower, and they wound up demolishing it because nobody took care of it.
Yeah, since I've been here, I think out of the three, Tampa, St. Pete, and Clearwater, I think St. Pete has the best downtown, particularly if you're on Central Avenue. It's just like endless restaurants that you can choose from.
Yeah, no, and St. Pete had always been, you know, the retirement mecca. So, Largo was a farming, it was a farming community. It wasn't until after the war, I guess, when defense contractors or government or whatever, you know, they got some manufacturing in there, but mostly it was ag, so say Citrus City.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That's great to hear the history on that, I always like hearing the history about that. If there's a museum, I definitely want to, like, check it out, because I like checking out museums I go, like, traveling. That'd be a great thing to check out.
And I'm sure they would absolutely have that. And, you know, it's fairly central in Pinellas County. So, you know, that's, you know, that's kind of nice. Pinellas Park is there and Bel Air. Yeah. All right. Well, good. It sounds, sounds good. Keep me posted.
Yeah. Enjoy the weekend. And I'll tell you next week about how JW went and if I hear anything from my interview today.
Sounds great. Okay, thanks.
Okay, hey, thank you very much. Okay, have a good weekend, everyone.
Yeah, so good luck to Eduardo. That that sounds like a promising job, because if he gets it other than the drive, he'll like it. So let's see. Tom is in Cedar Lake. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Oh, hi. I don't mean to change the subject, but my wife's concerned that Eduardo won't be calling into all these shows if he's doing something else.
Oh, no. He'll find time.
We hear him all the time, and I looked him up on Google AI, and we couldn't find him, but I didn't know if he, you know, is monetized and has a podcast or whatever, but we hear him all the time.
Absolutely. He just calls talk radio. You know, that's sort of a hobby, and
I do too, so. Yeah.
I assume that, you know, if he's working, that won't cut down. May change the hours, but it won't cut down.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, I actually looked up Tampa, and I had bad memories of the early 70s of my father driving from Northwest Indiana to my aunt's house in Port Charlotte all the way down Route 41 because he didn't like interstates. And I see it going through the east side of Tampa Bay. It took 4 days to get there.
Right.
And well, then that, we got there.
That was the route, by the way.
That
was exactly why a lot of people say, well, why did everybody in the Midwest settle in Tampa and everybody in the East Coast settle in Miami? And it was exactly that. It was the routes. Before there were interstates, 41 and 27, but 41 in particular was the main route, and it brought people right down there. And you mentioned Port Charlotte and all that. It used to be Tampa, St. Pete, and everything below it. Sarasota was developed, but most everything below it was a swamp. But now it's everything, you know. I mean, it's Venice, it's Port Charlotte, it's you name it. So, yeah. But the road system did it. That's what caused it.
I haven't been down there since then. Yeah, earlier you mentioned Al Lewis.
Yeah.
And Al Lewis, this is almost urban legend. I'm appealing to your listeners, but somewhere Al Lewis was scouting a basketball game at Hammond High in maybe 1974, a player named Rich Valavicious. And there exists a photo of Al Lewis and Bobby Knight, the Indiana basketball coach, watching a high school basketball game, but nobody can find it. I remember it, and everybody questions my memory whether that actually occurred, and maybe somebody has seen that somewhere. But Al Lewis would be on the radio with Mancow quite a bit, and it turned out he was, in fact, a basketball scout, one of his many jobs over the years. And we don't know if that's true or not. He was with him, but it sounds plausible. And
it is possible. When I first saw Al Lewis on the screen, I thought we were talking about, you know, Grandpa Munster. So
the same Al Lewis, yes, Grandpa Munster with Bobby Knight.
Yeah,
he was a apparently Al Lewis was also a college basketball scout.
Yeah, so supposedly he'd been doing that since 1935. And he played ball at T.J. Thomas Jefferson High. So that was the deal. But, of course, later, you know, not only the Munsters and all that, but a political activist and all that kind of stuff. So
He was quite a character. I heard him on the radio. He used to show up here in Northwest Indiana and be the master of ceremonies at some nudist event at the
Perfect.
Sun Club out here.
Yeah, Absolutely perfect. I mean, this guy was really out there as far as that goes. But yeah, he was doing a radio show before he died. He had some King Curtis song as his theme song, which you had to like. And WBAI, the Pacifica station, he had a show on that.
And oh, okay.
Then he's run for office a lot of times. But there was this one time he was running for office, and I think it was when it was the Green Party, but whichever it was, he was running for office, and he wanted his name on the ballot to be Grandpa, because everybody knows Grandpa. They wanted to be Grandpa Al Lewis, and they said no. And so the Board of Electors, sued him, said no. So he went and sued him, and he did not win, obviously. But he won enough votes that it put the Green Party automatically on the ballot for the next 4 years.
Oh, wow.
So, and, you know, ballot access to a small party is everything. So,
that was
the deal. And he tried to run for the Senate under the Green Party, but he lost out in the primary as far as that goes. But yeah, he was, he was always on Howard Stern and all that. And one thing I liked, he hated the PMRC, which I did too. That was a Tipper Gore's Parents Music Resource Center.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah, and the only thing I liked about it is it showed the world how eloquent Frank Zappa really was, because he got there and just created a new one for old Tipper with that. But Al Lewis was one of the people who was actively against that as well. So you got to love that.
Yeah, I remember seeing a TV show with, and then they portrayed Frank Zappa and the gentleman from Twisted Sister.
Yeah.
And
D. Snyder.
Testified to Congress.
Yeah,
yeah, D. Snyder. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good one.
So,
well, good talking with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, likewise. Likewise.
We'll be listening. We have a home-based business, so we listen to a lot of radio here.
Yeah, well, that's living large when you can work from home. Good for you.
Well, that's what they say.
Yeah. Well, I know.
We'll keep
yeah.
The going.
Right. The other side of that, of course, is you never get away from work, but you work it out eventually. All right.
I'm
thanks.
I'm just closing
for
the QuickBooks right now.
Ah.
Thank you.
Oh God, QuickBooks, don't start me. We'll talk later. Okay. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody who doesn't hate Intuit, right? And all subscription now. Don't start me. All right. 888-876-5593. We got Chris in Greenwood, South Carolina. Hopefully, we got 2020 news coming up too before the end of the night on WGN Radio.
Woke up this morning, looked the world in the face. I discovered that people were such an unhappy race. Everybody's getting hung up on the lonely life they're leading. Someone to lend a helping hand. Someone who will make them understand. Anyone can make it. All they gotta have is that. Got the greatest creation. Why try to be something new? Everybody's tired of this lonely life they're leading. Someone to give them peace of mind. Someone who can.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Dion Jackson, yeah, the guy who did Love Makes the World Go Around. Well, it was hard to get a thing called love, 1967 on Carla. Yeah, that was an Ann Arbor production. What was Ollie McLaughlin, yeah, did that. Anyway, Dion would have been 79 this week. Sadly, died in 2014, just 68 years old. So that's why I played it, because I've run out of your requests, and got a couple other related to this date in history. You'll hear a Jackie Ross coming up. All right, so we have another half hour, and we will be talking with Chris in Greenwood, and then there's room for you. And other than that, next live show will be Monday. It'll be, of course, Monday Night Trivia, but we will be delayed an hour because of the Blackhawks, and it's the only delay that week, as far as I know. I'll double check that on WGNRadio.com and find out, but I'm pretty sure that's the only one. And but so an hour late, but we'll definitely do it. I've already got trivia questions coming in, so we'll have a good time with that, and we'll pick it up in moments right after the news with Chris and you two coming up on WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Jackie Ross, of course, Jerk and Twine. Originally, the melody was the flip side of A Selfish One, but then they re-released it again as Jerk and Twine, or the fine record all the way around. Yeah, and of course, not a hit, but a fine record. Okay, so we got a couple requests, then we get to Chris in Greenwood. Let's see what Gene and Rick want to hear. So, Gene from Dalton, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hello, Raleigh. How are you?
All right, how are you doing? How you feeling?
Well, I'm not doing too good, but I know you'll cheer me up. I had my water turned off all afternoon to tonight. They were frozen pipes in the village in three places.
Oh, no.
I'm sitting here reminiscing, thinking of your cheerful voice, and I said I'm going to call you because I reminisced on one thing, and I know you're going to know the answer. You're just on top of it.
Uh-oh.
And I it's an oldie. From my grammar school days, I had a friend, and she was in all our operettas. She was very dramatic, all this business, but she always got me in to go downtown and get autographs of who was playing in all the hotels. They were big at the time.
Yeah.
And Dorothy Shea, who was called a Park Avenue hillbilly.
All right.
In 1946 and 47, she always played the Conrad Hilton in the big lounge there, the Boulevard Room, and she was fantastic. And we were both two young kids scurrying around, and she was there, and Barbara said, "Let's go up," you know, because everything was open and, you know, nice in those days. And we found her room, her suite, and she was with her mother, and they told us to come on in for the autograph.
Yeah.
And with that autograph, they had tea come in for two young girls, so we had a formal tea, a beautiful conversation with her. But she had two hits out back in that day.
I know one of them was Feuding and Fighting.
You're right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was one of them, but there was another one, too. I always go toward the sentimental ones.
Right, sure.
But, she was quite a woman. She really was. The only thing is, I don't know if you knew anything about her, but her face was all pockmarked. And, of course, when she went on stage, it must have been all covered. Mm. But she autographed a beautiful picture of her. I lost it all these years through all. I was a collector of everything, so I've mislaid it. It's probably in my garage. But the thing is that I told the story to my daughter, and she was fascinated when she was young, because, you know, Barbara and I would do these things for autographs. But she was quite a woman, and her mother, they were very gracious. You know, it really brought back a memory today. I was thinking of some of the things that were beautiful, because it's not only that. I've got the heart doctor on the phone for tomorrow. I got the appointment, and then Monday and Tuesday I have the other appointments with my primary and the other one. So anyway, to make a long story short, I knew that you would know and cheer me up. And I have another funny thing that happened, too, in one of our autograph scenes at the Congress Hotel. We go up, and we knew Skitch Henderson was in town. Barbara knew all this. And she said, let's go get his autograph, because then he was a big orchestra leader and played a lot of songs that she liked. So, of course, Barbara finds the room for his suite. We get up there, and not thinking we were so young, the door was open, wide open.
Yeah.
And so we knocked on it, and there was no answer. Then all of a sudden, here is this tall man standing there. He had just gotten out of the shower. And I ran off. And Barbara, I guess, got the autograph, but I ran off.
Oh, wow.
He grabbed a towel right away. That's all I remember.
I'll bet.
But it was the funniest thing that ever happened to me up to that time. And I had four brothers, you know. But I'll tell you, my mother was very old-fashioned. So that wasn't to be out there.
Oh, sure.
But
well,
anyway, today...
It's interesting you mentioned Dorothy Shay, because she was sort of a dichotomy. She would dress like she was in society, urbanite and all that, and she'd talk like she was a rural Southerner. And it was that kind of bit. And she used to appear a lot of times with Spike Jones, as far as that goes. In fact, while she was doing the Park Avenue Hillbilly Sings, she was on Spike Jones' CBS radio show, and that's when Feudin' and Fightin' came out and all that. But she worked with Abbott and Costello, and in fact, she was in the movie Coming Around the Mountain.
I didn't know that.
And she played a nightclub singer involved in a hillbilly feud, don't you know? And, you know, she was on Jack Benny, and she actually performed at President Eisenhower's inaugural ball. And hard to believe, but true. And she was interesting. And of course, she did a lot of the USO tour. And so a lot of the soldiers loved her from World War II. But that was the deal.
And I really liked her too.
yeah. And she started out as a straight singer, but then she developed that bit of the Park Avenue Hillbilly, and it really took off. So sadly, she died. She had a heart attack, and she was in her 50s, and that was actually in the 70s.
You know, I didn't know that.
Well, it was interesting, because she was she had been not doing anything for a while, and then she wound up a recurring role on The Waltons. She was the owner of the Dewdrop Inn, and that's when she dropped dead. And so they had to write her character off. And what they said, they mentioned that she sold the Dewdrop Inn and moved to California. Well, yeah, might as well have. So that was her. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad you told me the history of her, because she was so genuine.
Absolutely.
And impressed me at a very young age.
Yeah.
Because, you know, two little country girls from the Lothian, you know.
Yeah.
And here we are, always down there on Sunday afternoons. I got to do many things with Barbara. And I don't know whatever happened to her, because she moved to California. And, of course, I'm too old, and most all my schoolmates are the ones that I was close to. They're all gone.
Oh, yeah. Well, you and me both.
And sisters are gone.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the older we get, the lesser are standing. I agree wholeheartedly.
Yes, I'm the only one. Uh-huh. I am the only one out of eight children, their husbands, their wives, nephews, and now my Tani and everybody. You know, it's just, I'm the loner.
Yeah, but the other side of that is, remember, you've got a daughter, a granddaughter, a great-grandson, so, you know,
you're right.
The lineage goes the other way, you know, with
you're right.
with John and me. That's it. There's lineage ain't going in any direction.
Oh, well, you know what? You have been on top of the world and with music and all what you know. And you have that, and you're giving it to so many people, and you're so kind to so many people. Mm-hmm. And you are leaving a big legacy. And John is very, calm and social on the phone, too. So you have a lot going for you. But just think of what you're leaving for all. You talked to some of these pros, you know, the man that has his podcast on Sunday night and everything, and you know so much to teach. And that is a big legacy to me from such a young girl. Mm-hmm. And I think you lost your father young, too. So you've been through a lot, and you deserve
thank you.
Your life now.
I think most of us have. The earth is not a gentle incarnation. I don't think there's a survivor around who doesn't have plenty of stories. It's really just comes down to what you make of it. I don't think anybody gets, none of us get out of here alive, but along the way, everybody has trouble. And so, I don't know anybody who had it quote unquote easy. I'm sure they exist, but I don't know them. And but it's all what you do with it. And you're just so great because your voice, you sound like you're in your 40s, for God's sakes. And
that's what everybody tells me. Well, it's terrible when I call them.
They're right.
People are like the bakers.
Yeah,
these young kids. And then they want to ask me questions, why I am this way and everything. What should they do now?
Right. No, absolutely. It's downright amazing. So that's good. I hope that your upcoming doctor visits are going to be nothing to worry about.
Well, I'm hoping so too. But there was a bad accident when I was having a surgery last summer, and they didn't discover it until I changed to a research hospital, which was the University of Illinois downtown.
Oh, God.
And when she discovered it, this other doctor at Northwestern had cut into the urethra.
Oh, God.
So they had to do, some more work on me, and it's just not behaving well.
Oh.
And so now I didn't do the hernia first.
Right.
One of the doctors wanted to do what he called a fatty hernia, but it was growing. And I took my operation, for the female because it was so huge and bleeding all the time. Mm-hmm. So I had said to this young doctor, I said, you know what? I'm scheduled for my surgery the next week. And I said, I think in my judgment, I said, I better do that first, and then I'll let you do the hernia. And now it's puffed up because, this other operation isn't too great. I'll be going to all these doctors this week, and I'm going to be going to another urogynecologist Tuesday. That's with Northwestern and Palis, where it's close to me. Because that traveling downtown is getting to us both. So, you can only take Uber so long. And then when they transported me home, the doors flipped open on the transport, and it was horrible on the Dan Ryan Expressway, which is a horrible expressway here in Illinois.
Oh, God, yeah.
And the doors flipped open two times, and the young lady that sits by you in those transports, that she was so kind and so nice, but she was brand new. And she was telling the driver, please stop, the door is open. With that, I'm just, a day out of surgery, and I'm hanging out of, hanging on to the stretcher and bracing my feet
on
the bottom of that stretcher. And when the door came open, because he had to pull over, and get the doors closed, but lo and behold, he didn't close it. Well, it came open the second time. And you see all this traffic. It's right on you. It's busy, very busy.
That's scary as hell.
So with that, I hurt my legs. So now I have to go to a wound care doctor for my legs.
Oh, man. It never stops, does it?
So that, what do you call that? They say the doctor said your operation was a success, but the patient died.
Right, exactly. Yes. Yes. Well,
So what are you going to do? I've been through so much in my life. So just another piece for my book.
Yeah, you betcha.
We all have our book. You know, so that's right. We'll all have them. You know, Raleigh, we all have our book. We
yep.
had that beginning, and that middle was, I had, it was wonderful. Had a great husband. And I met him when I was 16, as I told, I mentioned
yeah.
it. And went to the Korean War and the whole bit when his fingers were cut off on my birthday yeah. that year when I planned
oh.
that big high mass
oh,
wedding.
God.
And it was something else. But he was bandaged up in all the skin grafts, and we just started out that way. But he was a good, good man. And he, I had a long, you know, time with him till
yeah.
2004. So, you know, it's just life.
Yep. No, you're right.
Yes, and
but,
your husband had a stroke, and mine had a stroke and open heart surgery.
Yeah.
And then the esophageal cancer and bone cancer and prostate cancer it started with. So, you know, you go through all of those doctors. You don't particularly like doctors anymore.
No, no.
So
well,
I wasn't going.
They call it the practice of medicine because they're still practicing.
You're right. There's Kimberly, you're right. Well, they practiced on me.
Yep,
you should have seen. Yeah. I won't name the doctor, but I'll tell you, I feel sorry for whoever goes to her. And my daughter was, Kimberly was right there. And you know what she said to Kimberly when she was pressing down on that, not knowing what she was doing? And she says, oh, your mother's a strong woman.
Oh,
and she doesn't know how much I was bracing myself to get there. Then she says, well, this should really be done in the operating room. Real flippant.
Great.
So that's why I changed doctors.
Yes, immediately.
You know, I had to.
Immediately.
I did immediately.
Oh,
yes,
man.
Indeed. But I have a very good doctor, but you got to travel down there.
Yeah.
And it's not easy. And she knows it. She said, you know, I know a doctor, you know, at Northwestern. She's new there at the practice. But, you know, for your convenience that you've got the primary, you've got your heart, you know, do it all in one. So that's what I have to do now. I might not like it, but I have to do it.
Well, good. Well, keep me posted. Let me know next week how it goes.
Sure. And maybe we can get the baby on a different schedule.
Okay.
That maybe, but, you know, that Elizabeth, that was so beautiful of all of you to do that for us.
Oh,
and,
sure. But
I hope to do that again.
But
yeah,
sleep is
2 months old.
Sleep is, yeah, but sleep is sacred. If Elizabeth can sleep, I don't want to wake her up just to talk to me. Yeah, every minute counts.
I know. Well, you know, at 43 years old, too, it's not easy.
I know.
To have your first child.
No, I
and,
know. Yeah.
Yeah, I won't be around, but my God, when she's 20, you know, when she's 63, he'll be 20.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, high school graduation, she's going to be ready to be on Medicare. No, I know.
I know. Oh,
yeah.
But, you know, my mom hit her last one at 43 from 1920 to 1943. So there was a lot of pregnancy there.
Yeah. No, that's fine. It's going to work out great.
Yes. I think women are more resilient, you know, than men. Really, when it comes to all that stuff. So she'll make it.
Yep.
She's got a few problems, but she's going to make it all right.
All
I know
right.
she will.
Well, good.
Yeah, she's got good genes, you know. Croatian and German, and my husband was German and French. So, you know, a lot of German in there.
Right, right. Yeah, that's right.
So,
well, good.
Yeah.
Good, all right. Well, I'll
talk
to you next week.
Now, you have a good weekend.
All right.
A safe one.
All right, you
and
too.
Thank you for being you.
Always. Talk to you soon. Okay, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right,
now.
So there you have it. Yeah, what a great family. Now, I want to find out what Rick wants to hear, but I think before I do, I got to do this right now on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. We've got about 4 minutes. We'll forego the bumper because I got a couple of people I want to talk to, and one of them is Rick in Marengo. So, Rick, welcome back to WGN Radio. Are you still with me, Rick? Rick?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. So what's up? What do you want to hear?
No, I was hoping to get this squeezed in, but your last caller monopolized a lot of time. So
well,
anyway, I just...
There's always next week,
well,
by the way. You know.
Yeah, no, that's true. Very true. But if you could have squeezed it in, I wanted to hear Nobody But Me by Lou Rawls.
Okay, you'll hear it next week.
All right. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it, Rick.
Yep.
All
bye.
Right, so wrote that down, and we will do that. Yeah, we were out of bumpers for this week anyway. And the final words, the final few minutes, go to Chris in Greenwood, South Carolina. So, Chris, you with me?
Yeah, I'm with you. How you doing?
All right, how about yourself?
I'm fine. We just got another winter storm coming this weekend.
Ah, well, yes, you do. I've heard about that. So,
yeah, you think if the groundhogs see his monster shadow, you think we're going to have winter storm every 2 days?
I have absolutely no idea, but whoever thought about that in Punxsutawney deserves to be knighted for a PR scam. It's wonderful. It lasts to this day. I have no idea.
Yeah, because I'm ready for some warm weather.
Yep.
And also, I called, have you ever heard of them local access alerts? They just like EAS systems, but it's on cable TV.
Well, cable carries EAS as well. So the system includes cable. So sure, I'm aware of it.
Uh-huh. And you can get it on every channel, and like local access alerts, they speak on the phone and give the warning, and they hit the dial tone and go back to programming instead of using those EAS tones.
Well, as long as you get the message, that's what's important.
Uh-huh. Even on radio.
Yeah, well, good.
Yep. All right.
Well, excellent.
Thank you, Raleigh.
Stay warm, Chris, and stay safe. We'll talk to you later.
You too.
All right, okay. And, yeah, that pretty much is going to do it to it. Now, again, trivia next week. Oh, man, I didn't get 2020 news in, and I know it's 90 seconds, and so I'll blow that. So right after the show is over, if you're listening on the stream, you'll hear 2020 news, and because there's just no other way to do it. We have Bob, who's keeping us on the air, and he's also the guy who sends me the wonderful links, yeah, that keeps me with things to talk about, and I appreciate that as well. And, of course, we thank John for screening your calls, but above all, I thank those of you who call. When you call, it makes the show a pleasure to do. And yeah, if you don't get in on some night, like Rick kind of was there toward the end, well, that's all right. Next week, again, Monday night will be, of course, it's trivia, Monday night trivia. We lose an hour due to play-by-play, but we'll start at 11 Central. But Tuesday through Thursday, it is full steam ahead. And especially if you call in the first hour. You know, I was talking to myself for quite some time. So, yeah, call early and we'll do it to it. So until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.
Brooklyn Bodega Bloodshed Plus. Time Has Come Today, and The Lion's Snare. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News. New York Deli Double Down. Flatbush turned meat counter mayhem when a hot-headed hailstorm of bullets ripped through a Brooklyn bodega. Two men sliced down between the cold cuts and canned goods. Customers mustered up courage and scattered as cops carved in fast, sirens screaming, searching for a ham-handed hit-and-run gunman who bolted before the bread went stale. Both victims were rushed to the hospital and are expected to survive as detectives grill witnesses and rewind the register tape. In this deli, the only thing that should be loaded is the pastrami sandwich, not the handgun. Out of time, back to the filcher. Hot schlub time machine in South Beach as crime runs out for a wanton weasel in the wind and on the watch list. Cops contend they came to claim this guy's clock after 4 years of futzing around for a fugitive who'd reputedly reached for a revolver to rip off a rich Rolex from a Turkish tourist. Fingers pointed at a fella already in the can on another case, so as soon as he was sprung, TikTok timepiece was up. Countdown to confinement, it's about time. Caper Lions. Rookies of the Jeer, the circle of high life trapping a trio of Detroit Lions newbies in a swank tank prank at a snazzy steak salon in Motown. The prime honored attrition of sticking NFL rookies with ridiculous restaurant tabs through three raw recruits with a $41,000 bill. In this case, a high-flying hoax. The wacky work of wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown, but the for real football feeding frenzies are frequently no fun for the new grids in town. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.